10 years or so ago, me and Christina and some of our family went up to Maine for New Year's. And we were staying at this cabin at this place we hadn't stayed before. And in the morning, Christina said, I'm gonna take the dog out for a walk. So she went out and there was 2-3 feet of snow on the ground, but you know, the dirt roads were plowed kind of. And about half an hour later, Christina and the dog come bursting through the door and slam it behind them. And Christina just falls back against the door and just bursts into tears. And I'm like, what's wrong? What happened? And they had been walking in a place, again, we didn't know, we hadn't been here before, and they were on this one road. And all of a sudden, these two gigantic German shepherds came running out of a yard, barking like demons. And our dog was usually pretty chill and wouldn't back down, but he said to her, in dog language, I'm out of here, and took her and dragged her with them, and they went running, and they ran all the way through the icy snow, all the way back home, burst through that door, terrified of what they thought might have happened. Thankfully, the dogs didn't chase them. They probably just got to the edge of their yard and then stopped, but it scared them to death. And this morning, we want to talk about fear. Fear is a powerful emotion. It's a huge part of human existence, fear is. And fear can be very helpful. Flashes of fear can be very helpful. I was driving one day on my way to church and had a green light, headed through the green light. All of a sudden, I get this glimpse out of the corner of my eye, someone is running the red light coming the other way. And just that instant fear, I slammed on my brakes and I almost avoided him, but I just caught the back end of his car. But if I hadn't seen that and if fear hadn't jumped in and made me hit my brakes, then he would have come right through my door. Fear can be very helpful, in particular those flashes of fear. But then there's often fear behind the fear. There's fear that's not so much a flash, but a fog that hovers thick over our lives. Even sometimes to the point where we're not sure what it is we're fearing. It's just this vague sense of anxiety and stress and worry that sits there. I imagine for people living in Ukraine right now, they're living in a lot of that fog of fear. People living with food or water shortage who don't have food security. I imagine there's a lot of that initial fear of, oh no, what are we gonna eat? But there's a fog of fear that hangs over about, I don't feel like my life is secure. There's the fear that hangs over you when your paycheck only pays for half as much gas as it used to, or 2/3 as much food as it used to. And there's the fear, the fog of fear that hangs over you when there's strife in your family or relationships that are fraying and fracturing. And the flashes of fear are one thing. The fog of fear is another. And more people seem to be living in and suffering from this fog of fear, especially after the last few years. That dread that hangs over, or sometimes you're not even sure why. And this psalm that we're about to read this morning is all about how to pray through fear, how to identify it and what to do with it. So turn with me to Psalm 3. And again, for the summer, we're going through Psalms every Sunday. And I've invited a bunch of friends starting next week that are going to be coming and sharing their favorite Psalms with us. But go to Psalm 3 today. You can go through our app and our notes if you want to and take notes right alongside it. You can watch the screen or open your own Bible. Psalm 3, and the first thing you'll notice, if you look at the beginning, before the psalm actually begins, there's a line that says, a psalm of David when he fled from his son Absalom. And that means what you and I are supposed to do is when we read the psalm, we're supposed to think about that story of what happened between David and his third oldest son, Absalom. And so let me tell you a little bit of that story, a little bit of the backstory. Absalom ordered and orchestrated the murder of David's firstborn son, Amnon. And to be fair, he had a reason. Amnon, who was Absalom's half-brother, had raped Absalom's sister. And so he was mad and angry. And so he went and arranged for and ordered and executed the murder of David's eldest son, Amnon, and then went into hiding and spent quite a bit of time there before David finally allowed him to come back. And once David allowed him to come back, Absalom then spent, and Absalom was this beautiful guy, had beautiful, long, flowing hair. He was this guy who people generally liked, and he spent 4 years ingratiating himself among all the leaders of Israel, positioning himself as the one who would be a better king, would be the right choice for king. If they would just come and support him, they'd get more justice from him than they were getting from David. And he spent 4 years cultivating those relationships until finally he had amassed enough support that he took the armies of Israel and marched to Jerusalem to kill David and take the kingdom. So this is what's happening between David and his son Absalom in this moment. And David hears that Absalom is coming, hears that Israel has turned and joined his side, and so he flees from his temple in Jerusalem, grabs whatever family and friends who are there with him, who are loyal to him, and they just start walking away with practically nothing. And as they go, David's got his head down, covered, and he's just weeping as he leaves his kingdom in shame and fear. Hold that moment in your head as we read Psalm 3. It says, Lord, how many are my foes? How many rise up against me? Many are saying of me, God will not deliver him. But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head. I call out to the Lord and he answers me from his holy mountain. I lie down and sleep. I wake again because the Lord sustains me. I will not fear though tens of thousands assail me on every side. Arise, Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies on the jaw and break the teeth of the wicked. From the Lord comes deliverance. May your blessing be on your people. Lord, help us to understand this psalm and how to apply it to our own lives and our own fears today, I ask in your name, amen. There are three parts to this psalm that will be very helpful as you know you and I go home this week and take time meditating on this psalm. There are three parts that can kind of help us know what to do and give us handles as we're trying to pray through fear. The first part is identifying your fears. The second part is grabbing hold of God and who he is. And the third part is simply asking for deliverance and trusting. So let's go to that first part, identify your fear. There are two layers to David's fear, right? First, he says, oh my God, look how many are my foes. How many rise up against me? The whole nation had turned against him. This is a very real physical threat that David is under. Thousands and thousands of people are coming after him, wanting to poke holes in him with pointy things and kill him. That's not the only fear going on here. There's a fear behind the fear. And the second couplet in the beginning of this first section expresses and kind of tells us about this other fear that's going on inside David. It says, many of them are saying, God will not deliver him. And that's the fear behind the fear. That's the fear of all these people are chasing me. That's the flash of fear. This fear, God will not deliver him. That's the fog of fear that's hanging over David. Because if God won't deliver him, that means he's no longer God's anointed. That means his whole identity that's been developing from the time he was a young boy is being wiped away. David's the kid God helped defeat a bear. He's the kid God helped defeat a lion protecting his sheep. David was the kid who God helped defeat Goliath. He was the young man that God helped overcome when King Saul was trying to kill him. That's who David was. And if God wasn't with him, then who is he? And that fear is like a dark cloud hovering over David right now. Maybe that's why when he fled Jerusalem, he walked out with his head covered, weeping every step of the way. And maybe that's why as they were walking out of Jerusalem, they're going down this road and there's hills on each side and a man shows up on one of those hillsides above them and starts cursing David out and throwing rocks at him. Turns out that this guy was a descendant of King Saul and held a grudge against David. And while David's going by, the guy's riding with them on the top of the hill, just throwing rocks and curses. And David's men say, "Let us kill this guy. Who is he to do this? You're the king." And David says, "No, leave him alone. Maybe God told him to come and do this." That's David's frame of mind right now. That's the dark cloud of fear hanging over David, is that his whole identity is going away. And maybe David is remembering what God said after. Remember when David committed adultery with Bathsheba and then arranged to have her husband murdered so that he could have her and that whole thing? One of the things God said to David after that was, "Out of your own household, I'm going to bring calamity on you." And so this fear David is feeling isn't just, "Oh no, a bunch of people are chasing me with pointy things." This is the fear of his whole life slipping away. His identity, everything that had made him King David was now crashing down around him. You and I probably haven't been through moments quite as dire as this, right? But we face physical threats. We face, whether it's sickness or disease, debt, violence in our communities, there's physical things that you and I face that are threats. And on top of that, we know that there is fear behind our fears as well. We know that there are flashes of fear that we experience, but we also know that there is this fog of fear that many of us live in, this stress, this anxiety, this dread that our lives are empty, that we're amounting to nothing, that we won't amount to anything, that there's no real future for us, or that something we love is being taken from us and there's a hole, there's a void. We know that fog of fear. And when you find yourself gripped by this fog of fear, the first thing to do is identify your fear to God. The first fear, but then also the fear behind the fear. Ask God to show you. And once we do that, we're ready to move on to the next thing David does. Look what David does. He identifies the fear, and then he grabs hold of God. That's what I call these two lines in verse 3, around which the whole psalm pivots. These two lines, verse 3. "But you, Lord, are a shield around me, my glory, the one who lifts my head." I call this grabbing hold of God because this is where David reminds himself who God is and what God is to him or could be to him. And it transforms David from fearful to courageous. David grabs hold of God by remembering three things. This verse has three things about God in it. One is that God is my shield. Now look, if you get up for work tomorrow morning, right? Or you get up to whatever, watch your kid, take care of your family, or you get up to go on vacation tomorrow and you pick up a shield as part of what you're gonna keep with you for the day. You got your phone, you got your keys. Oh, don't forget my shield. What does that say about what you're expecting during the day if you're walking around with a shield? Trouble's gonna come your way, right? If every day when you get up for work, you gotta also carry a shield with you, you're expecting trouble. A shield doesn't prevent trouble from coming your way. What a shield does is it protects the vital parts of you when trouble comes. So God, David says, is a shield around him, covering him. God, in other words, isn't going to keep bad things from coming his way, but God is going to protect the vital parts of him as the troubles do come. You know, a lot of people get God wrong here. A lot of your friends get God wrong here. A lot of people walk out of church and don't want to come back because they get God wrong here. They think that when trouble hits, they think that when things are going wrong, they think that means God has forgotten them or deliberately abandoned them or is against them. And they say, "Well, I did all these things to get God to take care of me. I paid my God insurance. Why isn't God coming through?" And then they walk away from God because their idea is that if trouble's coming my way, well, then God's given up on me. That's not the picture that the Bible paints of who God is. So what is the picture? What is God like? That's why David writes verse 4. Verse 4 goes with this first attribute of God. God is my shield. And remembering God's my shield reminds David of what that means. So verse 4, he says, "I call out to the Lord and he answers me from his holy mountain." You know what the holy mountain is? It's the mountain in Jerusalem on which at that time the tabernacle and then later the temple was built where God's presence was. And David is remembering all the days he would go over to that tabernacle, not far from his palace, and worship God, and they would make sacrifices. And what those sacrifices did is they carried the sin away and covered the people so that the punishment for that sin would not devastate them. That's what David's picturing. He's picturing up on that holy hill is where these sacrifices happen to cover us and forgive us. And that reminds him, God is my shield because God forgives my sin. Today, we also look to a hill just adjacent to that hill, the hill called Golgotha, just outside of Jerusalem, where they led Jesus and crucified him, and he died for us. Jesus died there being our shield. That was the moment Jesus, once and for all, stepped in as the shield around you and me to take all the arrows that sin had to fling and to take that death. And we look there and we remember that even though we may die, we still live because Jesus has protected the vital parts of us. We live forever in him. So you grab hold of God by remembering he's your shield. There will be trouble in life. That's why you need the shield. But Jesus has covered us and continues to cover us. You grab hold of God then by remembering the next thing. He's our shield. He's also our glory. David says, you're my glory. Well, what does he mean by that? You're my glory. He uses a word, and I don't usually tell you the words behind the words, but in this case, David uses a Hebrew word, kavod. And that word literally means what we kind of use it as glory and weight, not necessarily the sense of heaviness, but in the sense of the weight of your life, the substance of your life. And what David is saying, he's saying, God, you're the substance of my life. If you think about David's life from what we read about him in scripture, you think about the whole story, what we're learning as we go with David is we're seeing him go from a lightweight little kid to the heavyweight king of all of Israel. And so we see him, this lightweight boy who's shepherding, and then God adds something to his life. He overcomes the lion, overcomes the bear. God adds some weight to his life. He overcomes Goliath. God adds some weight. He has victory over victory. God adds weight until finally we arrive at this place where David is full of victories and children and wealth and power. He has become a weighty person. He's full of glory. But then there in that moment with Absalom chasing him as he limps out of Jerusalem, David can feel all that weight that he had acquired being stripped away because, and what David realized in that moment is he had misplaced the weight of his life. He had misplaced his kavod, misplaced his glory and his weight into things that could never hold it, that were now being stripped away. And that's why he's covered in this fog of fear because all those things that he had put his weight into, the weight of his life into, they're being stripped away. You and I, when we're covered in this fog of fear, it's often because we've also misplaced our kavod, our sense of glory, the weight of our life into things that can't hold it, that get stripped away too easy. So David then in this psalm remembers and realizes I've put my weight in the wrong places and that's caused this fear I'm in, it's misplaced kavod that's going on. And so he puts it back where it belongs, not in fame or fortune or progeny or power, but in God. God, you are the weight of my life. And then verse 5 happens. He says in verse 5, I lie down and sleep. I wake up again because the Lord sustains me. That reminds me of Jesus when the storm was happening around them in the boat and Jesus just went to sleep. Because Jesus trusted the Lord to sustain him, the Father to sustain him. In Jewish culture, and I've probably mentioned this to you before, in Jewish culture, the day doesn't begin at sunrise. It begins at sunset. Isn't that an interesting way to look at life and look at the day? That the day starts when the sun goes down. And so in Jewish culture, you go to sleep. That's the very first thing you do at the beginning of every day is you go to sleep. And that is a wonderful reminder. If you and I could tonight, when you go to sleep, say, this right here is the beginning of the new day. And the first thing I'm going to do is I'm going to go to sleep. And what that does is it reminds us that it's not our work. It's not all the things we build that add weight and substance to our lives. It's what God does. God's the one who gives us this rest, and God then wakes us up. And so when we wake up, we realize God's already been working to sustain me. Look, I was who knows where for those last 8 hours. And now here I am. God's been sustaining me. And now we just join in with what he's already been doing. Just a wonderful picture to remember that God is my glory. He brings weight to my life. And help me grab hold of him and get a grip on him. Because when you grab hold of God by reminding yourself he is your shield and your glory, fear can't have a grip on you. So we grab hold of God by reminding he's our shield, he's our glory, and then the last thing he is our courage. David says, you're the lifter of my head. When David walked out of that city, his head was down, it was covered, he was sad. But then the story goes on to tell us what happened. God sowed confusion into Absalom's counselors. And so they gave conflicting and bad advice. God sowed confusion into Absalom's army. And so when the time came to fight, they fell apart. And then we read that Absalom was riding away and his beautiful hair just blowing in the wind, like you can see mine doing. And he got it caught in the low branches of an oak tree. His hair got stuck. His mount went out from under him, and he was just left there hanging by his hair, hanging there, helpless from the branches of this tree. And David's soldiers rode up, found him helplessly hanging there, and they killed him. David didn't have to lift a finger. God judged Absalom for his arrogance and for his deceit. And David marched back to Jerusalem with his head high because God had lifted it up. Absalom tried to lift up his own head, and it literally got him killed. David trusted God to lift his head. And when God lifts your head, no one can smack it back down. So David writes verse 6, I will not fear, even though tens of thousands maybe surrounding me and attacking me from every side. I mean, that's pretty bold. Tens of thousands? Like, maybe I won't fear even if 10 guys come after me, but tens of thousands? You realize what David is saying there? It's not just bravado. It's not machismo. It's not a reflection of how much strength he has. It's who can stack up against my God? He is my courage. Grab hold of God, because when you do, fear won't be able to keep a grip on you. You know, all this reminds me, remember the story of Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego? The three young Jewish boys who were captured and taken into captivity under this King Nebuchadnezzar. And King Nebuchadnezzar builds a statue and declares, everyone has to bow down to my statue because I'm the greatest. And so thousands of people there bowing down to the statue, except these three guys, Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. They're not bowing down. Thousands around them, against them, and they're not bowing down. And King Nebuchadnezzar says, what are you doing? I'm going to give you one more shot, and if you don't bow down, I'm going to throw you in my oven over there. And they won't. And so he goes, and he's like, all right, I'm throwing you in the oven. And they're like, you know what? We believe our God will deliver us because he's our shield. But even if he doesn't, he's our glory. The weight of our lives is in him. He'll lift our heads. So go ahead. So they throw them into the furnace, remember? And then what happens? Suddenly there's a fourth person standing there next to them. But that courage is the kind of courage we're talking about. It doesn't mean that everything will go well. In fact, when you stand with Jesus and live for Jesus, there will be lots of opposition in this world. But we can trust that he is our shield. He is the weight of our life. He is our courage and will protect the vital parts of us. And so when you find yourself, this is, again, you can go home this week and maybe even now as we're talking, God's pointing to you those things that are the fog of fear in your life. But here's what you do. You begin where David began by identifying the fears and then identify the fears behind the fears. And then you go to God and you grab hold of God by remembering he is your shield and your glory and he is your courage. And then, very simply, you ask and trust. David says, "Arise, Lord, deliver me, my God. Strike all my enemies in the jaw. Break the teeth of the wicked." In other words, shut their mouths. That's what he's saying. Shut their mouths. It's a simple prayer. Like all of that, it starts, identify the fears. Remember who God is. Shield, the weight of our life, our courage. And then the simple prayer, "My Lord, rise, deliver me." Shut the mouth. Shut the voices that are whispering in my ears that you don't care about me, that you've abandoned me, that the things going wrong in my life mean that I don't have value, that you don't care, that I'm nothing, that I am gonna fall apart and disappear, that my very existence is at stake. All those voices that are causing this dread and this fear in me, Lord, shut them off. Punch them in the mouth. Break their teeth. I don't want to hear their voices anymore, Lord. I just want to hear your voice. And then here at the end, right before David makes his final request, David, he's praying and talking to God, and then he turns and talks to us. And he says this line, "From the Lord comes deliverance." He wants you to know that. From the Lord comes deliverance. From the Lord comes deliverance. These are not the words of just, you know, a theologian or a philosopher saying, "Oh yeah, I think it makes sense. You read the Bible and it's clear that from the Lord comes deliverance." No, this is a guy who went through it. Who went through it over and over and over again. He speaks from a vast and deep well of painful experience. And he looks us in the eye here and he says, "The Lord is the one where deliverance comes from." He learned this lesson over and over again through struggle, through failure, and through success. He learned it when he fought the giant Goliath. From the Lord comes deliverance. He learned it when King Saul was chasing him, trying to kill him. From the Lord comes deliverance. He learned it when other armies from other nations tried to track him down and kill him. From the Lord is going to come my deliverance. He learned it when his family was falling apart around him. From the Lord comes deliverance. He learned it when he failed and committed adultery and cheated took Bathsheba's husband and had him murdered and then lost his child with her. He learned it, from the Lord comes deliverance, even from my own sin and failures. He learned it here as he almost lost his kingdom and everything he'd ever built, that from the Lord comes deliverance. Listen to the voice of experience talking to you here. From the Lord comes deliverance. Nowhere else. Take this psalm this week. Worship team, would you start? You make your way back. Take this psalm this week and meditate on it. Remember last week we learned what that means. To meditate is to chew on, to talk about, to say it over and over again, read it over and over again, talk to others about it, talk to yourself about it until you find it's just like coming out of you and you're reciting it. And as you encounter the fog of fear in your own life this week, whatever may be causing it, do these three things. Identify your fear to God. Identify the fear behind the fear and talk to him about it. Grab hold of God by stepping back and looking at your life, doing a little self-evaluation and make sure, God, do I have any misplaced kavod? Have I misplaced the weight of my life somewhere? Have I misplaced my glory in other things? And so their shakiness is now causing this fog of fear over me. And then simply pray. Arise, Lord, deliver me. I know that deliverance comes from you and you alone. Fear cannot keep its grip on you when you and I grab hold of God.